And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Saturday, January 21st, 2017. This is the WGN Radio Theater, program 147 in the series. To my right, the vivacious and very, very under the weather, Lisa Wolf. Poor Lisa.
I'm sorry, I just have
She's got a cold. Oh, she's blowing her nose.
Yeah, that happens.
It's really disgusting.
I'm sorry. Some chicken soup would be great.
Yeah, and not for the soul, for your nose.
For my nose.
And then Elif Garris, our producer in the booth. Hi, Elif. How are you?
Hi, Carl, and sick Lisa.
Oh, I'm okay. It's just a cold.
You're okay?
I'll really be okay. I'm okay.
You need some zinc.
Zinc. All right. Thank you.
Dr. Elif at your service.
All right. I'll wait for it.
She plays a doctor on TV, but she really isn't one.
Yeah.
All right. So on this edition, we have sick Lisa and not sick Elif with Nick Carter, master detective from 1943. Then it's the Burns and Allen Show with their special guest, Jack Benny. And then Tales of the Texas Rangers, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Maniac about a man living a fantasy life who is actually locked up in a mental institution. And the winner gets a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's Pizza.
All right. A number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He played Ephraim Dervaroli in 2016's War Dogs.
We're talking exclusive access to a stockpile of Soviet bloc non-standard weapons and ammo. That's going to win this deal for us.
All right. You know who?
I'm pretty positive you mispronounced that name.
Dervaroli?
I think it's Ephraim, isn't it?
Ephraim? It could be Ephraim.
It could be, but it's probably not.
You think it's Ephraim? I think it's Ephraim Dervaroli.
All right. Well, if you know, you let us know.
All right. Who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back. This is show number 147 of the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
We're talking exclusive access to a stockpile of Soviet bloc non-standard weapons and ammo. That's going to win this deal for us.
And we have Bill on the line from Deerfield. Hi, Bill.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm feeling good. I hear you're not.
I could be better, but I'll be better. Maybe tomorrow will be a better
one. She's going to get me sick, too. No. She came into work.
I won't kiss you, and I won't kiss you. I'm not kissing anybody tonight. Bill, who is that actor?
I believe the actor is Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill is absolutely right. He's a great actor, and you have won a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate. You can visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can go online at loumalnatis.com. Thank you, Bill, for listening. We hope you'll stay with us for the show.
Thank you, and get well, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Thanks, Bill. All right, it's time for our first classic radio show of the evening. It's Nick Carter, master detective. It was first seen in Street and Smith dime novels and pulp magazines. And like Sherlock Holmes, Nick Carter solved cases too tough for police, which earned him the moniker Master Detective. Lon Clark played Nick Carter throughout the entire run from 1943 all the way to 1955. It was sponsored for most of its run by Old Dutch Cleanser, which I don't think there is Old Dutch Cleanser anymore.
Why can I? I can sort
of like
picture
Comet
it.
Or, yeah. You know, or Ajax.
You know, I can picture
Old
it, though.
Old Dutch
I'm
going to
look it up. I'll let you know at the next
Patsy
break.
Bowen, who was Nick's assistant, was played by Helen Schott and also Charlotte Manson. And Scubby Wilson, which was a reporter on the show, was played by John Kane. And Sergeant Matheson, the head of the police department, was played by Ed Latimer. 13-year run, Lisa. And there were some films, three films for MGM, starring Walter Pidgeon. But right now we have a radio broadcast for you from August 2nd, 1943. It's called Murder in the Crypt. Here's Lon Clark in part one of Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Calling Nick Carter. Another case for Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Yes, it's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction. Nick Carter, Master Detective. This week's curious adventure is
Murder in the Crypt. For Nick Carter and the Jekyll God.
You'll never know that I came here this time any more than you did the other time I was here. Those footsteps coming this way. It's Anubis. Anubis. Oh, it can't be.
I am Anubis, guardian of the dead.
No, no. I must be dreaming.
I am Anubis, the jackal god.
But you're not. No, no, no.
Scarabs from Abydos, condition good. Come in.
Are you Dr. Waldemar?
I am.
I'm Lieutenant Raleigh from headquarters. You called me about a museum guard who disappeared?
Of course, of course. It's about Shelby, the chief attendant here at the Egyptian Museum.
Where and when did this Shelby disappear, Doctor?
He failed to report to me as usual before leaving last night. The guards on the door say he did not leave the building. We've hunted everywhere for him, but we haven't found him.
Oh, you've hunted everywhere, have you?
Yes, Lieutenant. Everywhere except in the crypt of Snefru.
The what of who?
The crypt of Snefru, an Egyptian king of the 4th dynasty.
Where is this crypt? In the basement?
No, it's on the second floor, directly above this office. It was installed especially for Professor Glidden, the archaeologist. He alone has access to the crypt. It has a special lock on the door.
Oh, you mean he has the only key, huh?
Precisely. I called Professor Glidden's apartment a while ago, but he did not answer. I presume he is on his way down here now. I hope he can shed some light on this mystery.
Nick, isn't this the Egyptian Museum across the road?
Yes, Patsy, it is. Never been in it.
Looks too much like a mausoleum for me. Are we going in to look at the mummies?
That, Patsy, depends entirely upon Professor Glidden.
Who's he?
That bearded man who is beckoning to us in the doorway of the museum.
Oh, I see him. Is he a client of yours?
Yes. He phoned just before you arrived at the office this morning.
What does he want?
That I don't know, Patsy. Suppose we join him and find out. And you say, Professor, that the Archaeological Society gave Dr. Waldemar the money to complete the museum.
Yes, Mr. Carter. Provided that he would install a special crypt where I could place the relics from the tomb of King Snefru for examination and classification.
So the crypt is officially your property?
For the present, yes. When my work is finished, it will be open to the public.
I see. And just where do I come in?
I want you, Mr. Carter, to be present when we search the crypt. So there will be no question that Shelby is not there. This is Dr. Waldemar's office?
It is.
Oh, good morning, Glidden. This is Lieutenant Riley from headquarters. Hello there, Lieutenant Riley.
Hello, Nicholas Carter and Patsy, too.
We haven't seen each other in a long while.
Now, don't tell me that you're looking for this man Shelby, too, Nick.
I am, Riley. At the request of Professor Glidden. Oh. So since Dr. Waldemar has asked you to perform the same service, Riley, why don't we work together?
We're glad to, Nick.
Fine. Oh, you wouldn't object if Lieutenant Riley helped search the crypt, would you, Professor?
Not at all.
Well, Riley, shall we adjourn to the crypt?
Right, Nick. The crypt is on the second floor, right over this office.
Come, Glidden, unlock the door. This is an intricate lock, Waldemar. It takes careful handling of the key. There. Where's the light switch, Professor Glidden?
Just inside the door, to the right.
Very well, I'll...
Well, would you look at that now? I never saw a statue to resemble that beast. The body of a man and the head of a dog it has.
I'd call it the head of a jackal, Riley. Yeah. Am I right, Professor Glidden?
You are, Mr. Carter. That bronze statue is the life-size figure of Anubis, the jackal god. Anubis was the guardian of the dead, and his statue was set at the entrance of ancient tombs to keep out thieves.
A jackal face is enough to scare anyone away.
Come along, Riley. Let's look around inside the crypt.
Okay.
Well, here's a mummy case, which I suppose contains old King Sneferu in person.
Quite right, Mr. Carter.
Yeah, now here's the old boy's throne. It looks like the original Morris chair. Let's see.
There's nobody hiding under it, Riley.
Okay, Nick. Here, now look over there. In the alcove over behind the statue. Now, what is it, an ancient Egyptian bathtub?
That, Riley, is a sarcophagus. Huh? A stone coffin. The one that once contained the mummy case we just saw.
Gosh, now, it's a big thing now, ain't it? What's all this crazy writing on the front of it?
Those are hieroglyphics, Riley. Inscriptions about old King Sneferu.
Oh. What's inside this thing, Nick?
Oh, probably nothing now, Riley. Just the big open.
What is it, Nick?
This sarcophagus is not empty, Riley.
Huh?
Shelby's in it.
Oh.
And he's dead.
Once again, Lieutenant Riley, I must reply that I know nothing of this matter. As I've told you, I scarcely knew Shelby.
Now, look here, Riley. Your evidence against my client is purely circumstantial.
Nick, it's a disgrace to the memory of old Sim Carter, the way his one and only son tries to misinterpret the bald facts.
The bald facts in this case is this, Riley. You have no proof that Professor Glidden even came to this museum last night.
Look, all I want is one more bit of circumstance, Nick. Dr. Waldemar, can you think of anything else that might be... will interest him in this case?
Now, let me see.
Look, Nick. A strange woman coming down the corridor toward us.
She looks like something revived from ancient Egypt.
Walks like a cat. You can't hear the slightest footsteps.
Quiet, Patsy. She's stopping close enough to overhear us.
Lieutenant Riley. Huh? I have it. Ask the professor just how he knew that Shelby was missing when he telephoned Carter this morning.
I shall answer that question, Dr. Waldemar.
Where did you come from? Who is this lady, Dr. Waldemar?
Allow me to introduce Madame Dacla, our librarian.
Oh, you have a library in this museum?
Oh, yes. The library is in the other wing near the elevator.
I was the person who informed Professor Glidden that Shelby was missing. I telephoned him this morning. After the search began.
And Professor Glidden telephoned me, Riley, asking me to come here to protect his interests, which I have so far tried to do.
Mm. Madame Dacla comes from Cairo. She's an Egyptian, well-versed in ancient lore and legend.
Madame Dacla, do you really believe those old Egyptian legends?
I must believe them. With my own eyes, I have seen the living Anubis walk through the corridors of this museum.
But that statue couldn't possibly get out of a locked crypt.
To Anubis, anything is possible. It is his duty to guard the treasure in the crypt.
What treasure, Madame Dacla?
Treasure that is found in the tomb of every Egyptian king. Anubis, the avenging jackal god, knew that the museum god Shelby sought the treasure. So Anubis sought Shelby and killed him and put his body in the crypt as a warning. Anubis is all powerful.
You mean you've actually seen this this jackal god walking around this museum recently?
Anubis, the guardian of the dead, leaves the crypt of King Snefru and prowls these corridors every night. I have seen him do it. Gosh.
That will be all, Madame Dagmar. Thank you very much for coming.
Nick, suppose we go through that crypt again and see what we can learn.
An excellent suggestion, Raleigh. Patsy, suppose you go around and wait in the library with Madame Delka. We'll join you there later.
Nick, this crypt is as solid as a rock. We've tested every inch of floor and walls and ceiling here.
Yes, Riley, every spot we've tapped seems to be solid stone or concrete.
Nick, suppose we check those measurements again, eh?
Oh, no use in that, Riley. The room's 30 by 30, with 4 feet out for the door on one side and 8 feet out for the alcove on the other.
How big did you say that sarcophagus was, Nick?
It's 8 feet long and 6 feet wide. Practically the same size as the alcove it's standing in. And it's 4 feet, 6 inches high. Why?
Well, I was just thinking, Nick. That's an awful big chunk of rock there.
Well, Professor Glidden says this one weighs over 1,100 pounds.
It's over half a ton. This goes to show that the floor in this crypt must be solid to support such a weight day in and day out.
There's an answer to this case somewhere, Riley.
Yeah.
Even if I don't know yet where it is. Come on. Let's get back to the office.
If I'd followed my better judgment, I'd have locked Professor Glidden in a jail cell first.
He wouldn't be wise just yet, Ralph.
You're wrong there, Nick. And I'll tell you why. This door here is the only way in and out of that crypt. And this key, the only key there is now, belonged to Professor Glidden.
Riley, I want to learn the motive behind Shelby's murder. There were some strange things going on around this museum.
Three ancient anklets, one jar of perfume. Come in, come in. Oh, it's you, Mr. Carter. Miss Bowen, yes. Uh-huh. Well, are you convinced that only Glidden could have entered that crypt upstairs?
I never like to accept the obvious, Dr. Waldemar.
Oh, there goes the closing bell. I must put these Egyptian relics back in the vault.
Oh, we're out of here.
A large vault, that is, Dr. Waldemar.
Yes. The museum requires a large vault. I had this one built here in the wall especially.
Was it included in the original plans for the museum?
Well, no, not exactly. This wing of the building was still unfinished when the architect died. In completing it, we made some minor changes.
I see. Doctor, do you think Madame Dacla...
You must excuse me for a few minutes, Carter. I must speak to the attendants before they leave. It was one of poor Shelby's duties. It will only take a few minutes.
Oh, I'm knocking. Oh, that's a break. On knocking. But anyway, that's Nick Carter, Master Detective, from August 2nd, 1943, Murder in the Crypt, Lon Clark, on this episode of Nick Carter, Master Detective. Let's take an 18-second break, then we'll be right back. That's right.
Thanks, David.
Right. Thanks, David. 11:35 on a Saturday night. I'm with here with...
I'm here with a very sick... I'm not that sick. I just have a lousy cold.
Yeah.
I sound bad.
How'd you get a cold?
I don't know. I don't know where that came from. I think it was from Elif. She had one the other day.
Carl.
2 weeks ago?
Just about.
Yeah. What's the incubation on a cold?
Just don't breathe.
Like 3 days, right?
Something like
Please
2 weeks.
Don't breathe. Listen, you got to start taking Juice Plus like I do. My sister Carlene got me hooked on Juice Plus.
Did you bring
Haven't had a cold since.
Did you bring it for me?
Huh?
Did you bring it for
me?
No,
I didn't know you were sick. You got to take it before you get sick.
Oh, all right.
Oh, Lisa, sheesh. I got to teach you everything.
Sheesh.
Nick Carter, Master Detective. That's what we're listening to right now. This is called Murder in the Crypt. Let's get back to Nick Carter, Master Detective.
By the way, Patsy.
Hmm?
There's something on Waldemar's desk that should interest you.
You mean that odd-looking jar?
Mm-hmm. It contains some ancient Egyptian perfume, he said.
Hmm. Smells like roses. Very strong.
You better put it in the vault, Patsy. Waldemar must have overlooked it.
Can you smell it, Nick? It's powerful stuff.
Yes, I can smell it, all right. Put it in one of the shelves in the vault.
Oh.
What's the matter, Patsy?
I just tripped on a small step at the front of the vault.
You didn't spill any of that priceless perfume, did you?
Well, I'm afraid... Yes, I did spill a few drops of it, Nick.
Well, don't tell Waldemar. Oh, I hear him coming. Come out of the vault and look innocent.
Okay.
Well, Carter, another day is done. Oh, if you'll please stand away from the vault, Miss Bowen. I should like to close the door. Thank you. By the way, Doctor... Was there any treasure buried with King Sneferu? Probably. It was the custom. But it is also probable that such treasure was stolen centuries ago.
Well, isn't Glidden interested in the matter of treasure?
Possibly. But he's more interested in translating the hieroglyphics on the sarcophagus.
Hmm. Well, Patsy, I must be going.
You must be going? You mean you're going to leave me here in the museum?
Only for a little while. I want you to go back to the library and have a talk with Madame Dacqua, Patsy.
Talk about what?
I'll tell you that while we're walking to the other wing. Good night, Dr. Waldemar.
Good night, Mr. Carter.
Mr. Carter isn't interested in ancient manuscripts, Madame Dacqua. He wants to see the architect's plans for this museum.
Oh, but he should ask Dr. Waldemar for those.
I don't think Dr. Waldemar has them. Mr. Carter wants the original plan.
I shall be glad to see if I can find them for you. I shall try the file cabinet by the door.
Well, they're not under A for architect.
And they are not under B for building plans either. I shall try under M. Museum plans.
What's that clumping sound out in the corridor?
Yes, yes, here they are. In this folder. Plans for Egyptian museum to be erected.
Look!
In...
Coming through the door!
Anubis. Welcome, Anubis.
Anubis gives no greeting to those who defy him.
I have never defied you, Anubis.
You have sought the treasure that I guard.
Never. Never. I have always...
Let go of him! Whoever you are! Let him go!
Away, away you go!
Now, what new mischief is going on here, Nick?
O'Reilly, you're just in time.
Huh?
Patsy was just going to tell me. Who was it that took Madame Dacqua away, Patsy?
It was somebody. Somebody who looked like Anubis, the jackal god.
What?
Really, Nick. Madame Dacqua had the plans of the museum in her hand. They're gone, too.
Nick, this time we're going to look in that crypt upstairs first. Come on! Find that light switch now, Nick.
Right, Riley.
Yeah, there she is, laying right at the feet of that creature Anubis there.
You mean the statue of Anubis, Riley?
It may be a statue now, Nick, but I am near to believing that the thing comes alive when it chooses.
Is Madame Dacqua alive? She's
still breathing, Patsy.
Oh,
what do you make of it, Nick?
She's been drugged, Riley. Quick, get her over to the door where the air is fresher.
Yes.
That's right. She's coming around now.
Where am I?
You're all right, Madame Dacqua.
Oh, but I am in the crypt now. And the last I knew, I was in the library. I knew it. I knew steel doors are no barrier to Anubis.
Help her outside, Patsy, so I can lock the door here.
You lean on me, Madame Dacqua.
But I tell you, it is useless to lock that door. Anubis can pass through all barriers.
Maybe so. But Professor Glidden can't. Come on, Madame Dacqua, I'll take you back to the library. Then I'm going to put the professor in jail where I can keep my eye on him.
From now on, there'll be no calling.
Patsy.
Hmm?
When Riley opened the crypt just now and found Madame Dacqua, did you notice the peculiar fragrance in the place?
I must have been too excited to notice it, Nick. What was it like?
It was the perfume of roses, Patsy. Musty, ancient roses. You should have recognized it.
You mean It was like the perfume from the bottle I spilled in Waldemar's office?
Yes, Patsy. It smelled exactly the same.
I admit nothing, Lieutenant Riley. I can't tell you how either Shelby or Madame Dacla got into the crypt.
It's like I've been trying to tell you, Glidden. It's very simple. You had two keys, but you only gave me one.
And as I've been telling you, Lieutenant Riley, there was no duplicate key.
Stay out. I'm busy here. I said stay...
Hello, Riley. Hello, Glidden.
So it's you again, Mr. Nicholas Carter. Well, I don't care whether Professor Glidden is your client or not. We're not releasing him.
I don't want him released, Riley. I just want to ask him a few questions. Tell me, Professor Glidden, when you sent those relics of King Snefru to the Egyptian Museum, did Dr. Waldemar have any chance to examine them?
Why, no. They were all heavily boxed and crated. That is, everything except the sarcophagus. That was handled separately. Waldemar installed the sarcophagus in the crypt before I arrived.
I see.
I seem to recall that Shelby helped him set it up. The boxes and crates were all upstairs when I got back. But I opened them alone and set up everything myself, including the statue.
That's all I wanted to know. I'm sorry, Professor, that you'll have to spend the night here. But I hope to arrange your release by morning.
All right, Sergeant. Take the professor to his cell.
Yes, sir. Come along, Professor.
Say, Riley. Will you do something for me?
Why should I?
Why shouldn't you? You'll learn something yourself. And that's always a help in a murder case.
All right, Nick. When can I lose?
Fine. Pick up Patsy. She has all my notes, and you may need them. Then both of you go to the crypt.
Where'll you be, Nick?
I have to attend to another matter first. Now listen carefully, Riley. Mm. Here's what I want you to do. When you get to the...
How long have we been in this crypt, Lieutenant Riley?
Oh, it's about 15 minutes, Patsy.
If you didn't have a luminous dial on your watch, I'd say it was hours. Why did Nick say that we should stay here in the dark?
You'll have to ask Nick that when he gets here, Patsy.
Where did Nick say he was going?
Well, no, it might be that he's calling on Madame Dacla.
What?
Oh, just a questioner, you understand.
Oh, Riley, of all the ridiculous notions.
Well, Dacla's boyfriend Anubis is right here beside us, Patsy. Do you see it? This statue of Anubis must be solid bronze, Patsy.
If nothing happens here, something will happen when I find Mr. Nick Carter.
Only 10 minutes more, Patsy.
I'm getting so used to this darkness, I can see the sarcophagus plainly. Looks so big.
Yeah, it is big. It's almost...
What's that?
I don't know.
It sounds as if something was happening at last. Riley!
Hey, what is it, Patsy? You're not getting hysterical now, are you?
Riley, I smell something. The perfume of roses. And it's getting stronger.
Now, what has the perfume of roses to do with all this here?
Riley, look. Look at that sarcophagus.
Patsy, what we're looking at can't be happening here.
Oh, but it is. That sarcophagus is rising straight up in the air.
I've always said that Sian was believing.
Look, I see what's doing it, Riley.
You can't tell me that anything that will make a stone coffin weighing half a ton go floating up in the air 5 feet off the floor, Patsy.
It's on top of an elevator, Riley.
An elevator?
Sure, that's what's lifting it.
Well, glory be. You're right, Patsy. That's what that rumbling sound was.
Riley.
Yeah.
The man coming out of the elevator with a flashlight.
Wait till I draw my gun, Patsy. I'll fix it.
You're too late, Riley. I have you covered.
It's Dr. Waldemar.
Why,
Riley, that elevator is the vault from Waldemar's office.
Right, Miss Bowen. I have you both covered. Don't try anything, either of you.
Well, what would you be trying, Waldemar?
There will be two new victims in this vault, Lieutenant Riley. Two fools who, like Shelby, found out too much. But I'm sorry it isn't three. Nick Carter would be a welcome addition.
You really mean that, Waldemar?
Nick, where are you?
Carter, how did you get here?
I've been waiting for you in King Snefru's sarcophagus. And now if you...
I'll kill you first, Carter.
I doubt that. Okay, Patsy.
Look out, Patsy! He's knocking over that statue! It's fallen over!
Professor will be along in a minute now, Patsy. He called me at the hospital and asked me to meet him here outside the crypt in 15 minutes. Said he wanted to examine the elevator in the crypt.
Was Waldemar dead, Nick?
No, Patsy. I only wounded him. He knocked himself out when he staggered against the statue of Anubis. Waldemar made a complete confession when he recovered consciousness. He's admitted that he was hunting for the king's treasure and wanted to find it before Professor Glidden finished translating the hieroglyphics.
And he was using the elevator to make secret trips between his office and this crypt.
Exactly, Patsy. When Waldemar completed the new wing of the museum, he modified the original plans and put his office at the end of the first floor corridor. Then he built this crypt on the second floor, right over his office. Evidently, the elevator was already installed, and Waldemar brought the sarcophagus up on top of it.
And there was a sarcophagus standing in an alcove that was really the elevator shaft.
Mm-hmm. The elevator itself became the vault in Waldemar's office. He disguised it with shelves and loaded them with curios, but it was still an elevator.
And you think Shelby found out about it?
Shelby must have helped Waldemar arrange things, since it was more than a one-man job.
Then later, Shelby decided to look for the treasure on his own.
Apparently. Waldemar confessed that he murdered Shelby for those very reasons and left the body in the crypt to blame the crime on Professor Glidden.
And Waldemar put Madame Dacla in the crypt so Glidden would be blamed again.
Exactly. But he didn't have to kill Dacla. She knew nothing, you see. He merely grabbed Dacla in order to get the original plans of the museum.
Here comes the professor now, Nick.
Oh, hello, Professor. Right on time, I see.
I'm so glad to find you here, Carter. I wanted you to be here when I examined the crypt in the elevator. I want no more surprises.
Well, I don't think anything else is going to happen up here, Professor, but I'll be glad of the chance to do a little extra looking around myself.
There's that Anubis again. He's on his face this time.
Well, it was quite clever of Waldemar to disguise himself as Anubis. He really did resemble the statue.
Well, look, Nick.
Where, Patsy?
There at the statue lying on the floor.
Why, the head is completely turned around.
Yes, the fall must have knocked it loose. Oh, give me a hand with it, Professor. We'll set it up again.
Well, certainly, Carter. It's pretty heavy, but...
Yes, it is.
Go! Oh, Nick, is it real?
I imagine it is, Miss Bourne.
Why, this must be the treasure of old King Sneferu's.
So that's where the royal treasure was hidden. Waldemar must have looked everywhere except in the head of this statue.
So Anubis was really the keeper of the treasure. Well, congratulations, Professor. And I hope this discovery makes up for all your troubles.
It does indeed, Mr. Carter. I shall now be able to visit Egypt again.
There's just one problem that still bothers me.
And I suppose, as usual, that the problem represents the crux of the whole case.
It does. When I put that jar of perfume on the shelf, did you already know that the vault was an elevator?
I did, Patsy. The elevator floor wasn't quite level. That's why you tripped as you went into the vault.
But of course. But, Nick, what made you think it was an elevator in the first place?
It's quite simple, Patsy. There had to be an elevator to take the sarcophagus up to the crypt in the second floor.
But, Nick, there's an elevator in the other wing of the museum. They could have taken the sarcophagus up that way and wheeled it across to the crypt.
Patsy, how large is the sarcophagus?
Why, it's 8 feet long and 6 feet wide and 4.5 feet high, didn't you say?
Mm-hmm. And how wide is the door to the crypt?
4 feet, according to your measurements.
Exactly. Now, Patsy, do you think you could put a sarcophagus 4 feet 6 inches high through a door only 4 feet wide?
Of course not, Nick.
Of course not, Patsy. Not even Dr. Waldemar could do it. Up through the alcove was the only way. Waldemar probably hoped that no one would think to compare the size of the door to the size of the sarcophagus.
And nobody did, except Nick Carter.
This was another strange experience of Nick Carter, master detective, called Murder in the Crypt, or Nick Carter and the Jackal God. Another of the curious adventures of Nick Carter, which are brought to you regularly by WOR Mutual. In the strange adventure you have just heard, Nick Carter was impersonated by John Clark, Patsy by Helen Choate. The story was written for Nick Carter by Walter Gibson. Original music was played by Lou White. The entire production was under the direction of Jock McGregor. Next week at the same time, listen to another curious experience of Nick Carter entitled
Murder
Skull Island. Or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Sea Serpent.
This story is a copyrighted feature of Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. The Return of Nick Carter is produced in the studios of WOR and is broadcast over most of these stations every Monday evening at 9:30 Eastern Wartime. This is Mutual.
The Mutual Broadcasting System, Lisa, had an organ, and they used that a lot. You hear that? Dung, dung, dung.
I heard that.
You know, Mysterious Traveler, Nick Carter, The Shadow, these were the top shows, and they didn't have a live orchestra. They had an organ, and I guess that's how they saved money.
Well,
right?
You know what? It has a good appeal, though.
It was great.
It gives a mood.
Yeah, I think for these kind of dramas,
the right kind of mood,
these
yeah.
mystery detective shows, an organ was just fine.
It was perfect.
Right? And interestingly, this announcer must not have been their regular announcer because he called Lon Clark John Clark.
That's like
if I were to say, and to my right, the vivacious Lucy Wolf.
Lucy.
Yeah.
I like the name Lucy.
You know,
I'm
or
okay
something
with
like that.
That.
Called him John Clark instead of Lon Clark. That's Murder in the Crypt from August 2nd, 1943. Hope you enjoyed that. And this was written by Walter Gibson. And Walter Gibson was a very famous magician, and he also was a terrific writer. And he was the guy that actually created Lamont Cranston, alias The Shadow. There was a Shadow, which was a narrator of pulp stories. It's a guy that narrated stories. It was a very popular show. And then the producers of The Shadow went to this guy, Walter Gibson, who wrote this story and said, you know, we've got to create something here, like a dramatized radio show about this character, The Shadow. Can you create something? And he did. He wrote this Lamont Cranston guy who learned the power to cloud men's minds in the Orient, and he could make you, you know, he could... you would be invisible, you know.
Right.
The Shadow was invisible to you. If you were a bad guy,
sure.
He could come in there and be like, hey, Lucy Wolf.
Lucy.
And you wouldn't be able to see him. So Walter Gibson, the writer of this, is the guy who created the Shadow character of Lamont Cranston.
Right,
and all that.
Right.
All right. Little tidbits there. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, David. Right, it is 12:06 on a Sunday morning, Lisa Wolf. Poor Lisa.
I'm fine.
But you know what?
What?
One of our listeners said garlic soup.
Garlic soup, and another one
but
said...
But she can't have garlic soup because she's a vampire.
Yeah, that actually sounds good, and some little Vicks vapor rub under the nose. So
yeah.
See what I can do.
Little Vicks.
A little Vicks,
a little garlic.
And I'm good to go.
And a little Lysol for the microphone.
Yeah, that's true. This is my own microphone.
Yeah, one of our listeners said, make sure you Lysol that microphone after you leave.
Well, this is my own. I don't share
mics.
Yeah,
Lisa brings her own microphone.
I do. You know, it's a good idea.
Yeah, is it?
I think so. A lot of crazy people through this studio.
Yes.
You bring
your own microphone?
Well, she brings her cover.
Windscreen.
Yeah, windscreen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the microphones,
the cover to the microphone.
Right, yeah. I do the same thing.
I know.
You know?
Two crazies.
We are little germophobes. Yeah. Two germophobes. We brush our teeth a lot.
We do.
In this hour, we are going to tune in to the Burns and Allen Show from 1948, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series Z, The Beginning of Everything, about Zelda Fitzgerald and her marriage to F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Oh.
Who wrote what famous novel?
Oh, The Great Gatsby.
There you go.
Yeah, you know what.
Yeah, you're on it.
No matter what they say about me, I know a few things.
That's a good one.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the line to call in to win.
And you will win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's The Best Pizza in Chicago.
All right, here's a hint. This actress played Selby in 2003's Monster.
No, I don't want to hear this, Lee.
But
what you need to.
We can be as different as we want to be, but you can't kill people.
All right. Do you know who that actress is? Great actress.
Yes, she is.
And yes, I would date her.
Oh, okay.
312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
And we are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Elif, can you play that one more time?
No, I don't want to hear this, Lee.
But you need to.
We can be as different as we want to be, but you can't kill people.
And we have Sarah on the line from Des Plaines. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank
good.
You.
Good. We're glad you got through, and we're hoping that you recognize that actress's voice.
I am pretty sure that's Christina Ricci.
Christina Ricci is the one, and we are thrilled to give you a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's. It is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza and my very favorite deep dish pizza besides, and you can visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and order online at loumalnati's.com. Thank you so much for listening
hey,
and calling in.
Sarah.
Thank you. Yes.
Sarah, if I was a pizza deliverer and I was coming over there, are you a pretty good tipper, like $2-3?
I'm always a good tipper.
That's good.
I appreciate when someone brings the food to me.
Yeah, because I was going to have Lisa bring it over to you, but she's sick, so you don't want to get sick. So I'll bring it over
to you. But I'll eat it. I eat it in isolation.
I'm going to bring it over to you, Sarah.
And also, Lisa, I'm a singer. Make sure you're drinking plenty of water. Also, tea with ginger.
Oh.
Yeah,
how
we
about tea with Marianne?
Tea sounds really good right now. Let's see if we can find some around here.
All right.
Thank you, Sarah.
All right. It's time for Burns and Allen. This was a comedy duo with George Burns and Gracie Allen. They started in vaudeville, how you got your start,
mm-hmm.
Lisa.
Yep.
And they appeared on the BBC, and there were appearances on Eddie Cantor and the Guy Lombardi shows, and then radio beckoned, and they transitioned from radio to movies and TV. They were on the radio, Lisa, 18 seasons from 1932 until 1950, and they, of course, had a very successful television show as well. Just a great series, The Burns and Allen Show. And on this episode, from January 8th, 1948, their special guest is Jack Benny. Here's part one of The Burns and Allen Show.
Another cup of Maxwell House coffee, George.
Sure. Pour me a cup, Gracie.
You know, Maxwell House is always good to the last drop.
And that drop's good, too.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With our special guest tonight, Jack Benny. Yours truly, Toby Reed, Mel Blanc, Gail Gordon, Meredith Wilson and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and Bill Goodwin.
For America's Thursday night comedy enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. And for America's everyday coffee drinking enjoyment, it's Maxwell House. Always good to the last drop.
Life is a funny thing. Upon some men it bestows fame, fortune, and success, yet cruelly withholds from them the thing they long for most of all. In the city of Beverly Hills, California, live two such men, Jack Benny and George Burns. Each apparently successful, yet nursing in his heart a secret unfulfilled ambition. What is Jack Benny's ambition? His dream? Listen.
Gee, when is the world going to recognize me for what I really am? A concert violinist.
Monsieur Benny, please. The violin lesson is over. Now may I have my money?
Professor LeBlanc, tell me something honestly. What do you think of my playing? Now be frank.
You want the truth?
Yes.
First, give me the money for the lesson.
Look, I'm tired of being the comedian, the clown, the pagliacci.
Please, Monsieur Benny, I must go. Get the money out.
Sure, it's brought me fame and riches, but when you're not happy, what good is gold? It's turned to lead in my pocket.
Monsieur Benny, please, get the lead out.
Look, I could only be a concert.
And just a few blocks from this scene of frustration, we find the other man, George Burns. What is his secret ambition? Listen.
Boom, 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 down in the garden where the rose grows, honey, oh, mine. Love you so. Love me like a flower, don't. See, Gracie, if only the world would recognize my singing voice.
Well, it does, George. Everyone recognizes your singing voice.
Really?
Well, sure. It's after they recognize it that the trouble starts.
If for some reason my voice just doesn't seem to sell.
Oh, lots of people think it does.
Think it sells?
Oh, sells! Oh, what fools they are. You have a beautiful voice.
You really think so?
Oh, yes. You sound like a nightingale flew down your throat and built a nest there.
But I never get a chance.
Yeah, I know, dear. Just like Jack Benny with his violin.
Yeah. Look at that party we went to the other night with Jack. When I started to sing, what happened?
They tried to drown you out.
Yeah.
Only it's worse than it sounds. They tried to drown you out in the swimming pool.
Well, thank goodness Jack started to play about that time. His violin was really a lifesaver.
Oh, yes. When they threw that in the pool, it gave you both something to hang on to.
Why won't people take our music seriously?
Well, George, they won't accept Jack as a violinist because they think of him as a great comedian. And they won't accept you as a singer because they think of you as a great... whatever it is you are.
A pickle salesman.
It's so unfair, George.
Sell rhubarb on the side.
There were you. There were you and Jack.
Care for a little horseradish?
No, George. There were you and Jack loaded with musical talent and all the crowd wanted to hear were those gypsy entertainers.
Well, those gypsies were good.
Not one bit better than you. I'll bet if you and Jack had been disguised as gypsies, the crowd would have... George! That's it.
Huh?
Why don't you and Jack disguise yourselves as gypsies and put on a concert?
Now, wait
a minute. Oh, it's a great idea. If people don't know that you're George Burns and Jack Benny, they might like you.
Well, thanks.
Now, Jack could be a gypsy violinist, and you could be a gypsy troubadour.
When a gypsy makes his violin cry.
Oh, you gypsy. When you sing, you'll not only make the violin cry, you'll make the whole orchestra bawl.
Maybe you've got something with the gypsy idea.
Oh, sure. Let's go talk to Jack about it.
People go for gypsies because they're romantic vagabonds. They've been roaming the earth for hundreds of years. Do you think Jack and I can put it over?
Absolutely. If I ever saw two men who look like they've been roaming the earth for hundreds of years, it's you and Jack.
Come on, let's go over and talk to Jack.
Well, what do you think of the idea, Jack?
I can't do it, Gracie. When I achieve recognition as a violin player, I'll do it on one thing and one thing alone. Talent.
But, Jack. Huh? Jack, it's a great idea.
I'm sorry, George. I will not deceive my public by disguising myself as a ridiculous gypsy.
Jack, you can make a barrel of money.
Money?
Yeah.
If we're gypsies?
Yeah. I thought so.
Anyway, it's not a cheat, you know. You know, I do have some gypsy blood in my veins.
Oh, really, Jack?
Yeah, of course, I only have a drop or two. You
know. Oh. How much of it is gypsy?
Well, the drop or two is gypsy. I have more. You know.
my father, my father ran a gypsy tea room back in Waukegan. Sam Benny's Romany Rendezvous and Delicatessen. My mother used to go around to the tables and read the Rye Crisps.
Yes, I remember. Yes.
Say, Jack, you and George can be gypsy brothers.
Oh, do we have to be brothers?
Well, brother acts are so popular in the theater. There's the Marx Brothers and the Ritz Brothers and the Mayo Brothers.
The Mayo Brothers are in the theater?
Well, they must be. People always talk about going to the Mayo Brothers for an opening.
Abe Lasfogle handles their knives.
Oh. You know, I'm glad you had this idea, Gracie. It sounds exciting, romantic. The Mysterious Gypsy Brothers. We'll rent the biggest hall in town and give a concert.
Yes, it'll be great, Jack. What if we do have to risk a little money to, well, you know, to put into it?
Money?
Yes.
We risk it?
Yes. I was afraid of that.
Oh, wait a minute. I've got an idea. We'll get someone else to put up the money, huh?
Someone else?
Yeah.
You mean we won't risk anything?
Yeah, not a cent.
Oh, we're in again. Yeah.
Now, I've brought you boys home to try on these gypsy costumes. Here, you spread this dark makeup on your faces while I finish curling your hair.
Gracie, is this necessary?
Of course, Jack. All gypsies have curly hair.
Well, okay.
There. Now, Jack, your hair is done. Put it back on.
Gee, it feels good. Still warm.
And now, George, I'll put a few waves in your hair, and then we'll put on the earrings.
Earrings?
Well, certainly all gypsies wear earrings. Now, hold still, Jack.
Hey, Gracie, these look like the gold earrings I gave Mary for Christmas.
They are. She insisted you wear them.
Well, how sweet.
She wants to see how you look with green ears.
Look, these earrings happen to be solid gold. Some appreciation I get. She doesn't even keep them clean. They're all sticky.
Well, Mary says that was on there when you gave them to her. It's from the Cracker Jacks.
Well, I'll be careful to wash off her birthday present before I give it to her.
Now, George, you put these other earrings on and this sash.
Okay.
And, Jack, here are some beads to go around your neck. And now we'll put this scarf around your head. There.
I feel like Carmen Miranda.
Now, you look wonderful. Come in.
Hi, Gracie.
Hello, Bill.
I just dropped by to say hello and... Who are the two old babes?
Oh, fine.
Well, they're gypsies, Bill.
Oh, gypsy fortune tellers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, read my palm, honey.
Look, I'm Jack Benny.
Quit kidding, you're a gypsy fortune teller. Now read my palm.
I tell you, I can't read your palm. I'm Jack Benny.
Come on, honey. Read my palm and I'll give you 50 cents.
I see a tall, dark woman. She looks like Dainty Marie. Now hand over my money, handsome.
Look, Bill, this is really Jack Benny, and I'm George. We're going to give a gypsy concert.
Oh.
With that sad gypsy music. Let's show him, Jack.
Okay.
Are you holding anything back?
No.
That's the first portion of the Burns and Allen Show. Classic Jack Benny and George Burns there, along with Gracie Allen, January 8th, 1948. We'll get back to that in just a couple of minutes. But first, these words. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf and I and Elif Garrison, Roger and David, we're here every Saturday and Sunday night. So make sure you mark your calendar. If you are spinning the dial, you know, when you're like going back and forth with the dial, if you heard a classic radio show and were like, what the heck is this? Well, guess what? Here on the WGN Radio Theater, we play classic radio shows every Saturday and Sunday from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. You get six shows, six classic radio shows, right, Lisa?
Yeah, and a little bit of Carl, too.
Yeah. And we have a website, little Lisa. We have a website. It's WGNRadioTheater.com. We have a Facebook page where we would love you to like us. If you would go to Facebook and just search WGN Radio Theater. I think that's how it's done, right?
Yep, our schedule is on there. And we also have some photos from the radio shows we played tonight, some of the actors involved in them.
Yeah, like for instance, we're listening to Burns and Allen right now. And there's a terrific picture of George Burns and Gracie Allen. Prior to that, we tuned in to, what was the first show we played? Trying to remember. Nick Carter, Master Detective.
It's and all those jokes you were trying to remember. It didn't have space up there for...
No. No, there's very little space. You know, I took up space. Remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we know that one.
Took
but
up
there,
space.
There is space for classic radio in there, so that's a good thing.
I do have... I seem to have lots of room for classic radio knowledge.
That's true.
But that's
about it. There's no more space left over after that.
I guess not, yeah. And then a little later, it's Tales of the Texas Rangers. There's a great picture of Joel McRae, who stars in that. So we always put pictures on our Facebook page. Check that out. But when you go there, please like us, because we want to build our likes. We want to get, like, a fraction of the likes Nick DiGilio has. He's got a lot of likes.
Oh, we've got a fraction, all right.
He's got a lot of likes. Yeah. What are you eating in there, Elif? Elif is...
cheese and crackers.
Her jaws are flapping there. What are you eating in there?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay. All right, well, let's get back to this. Burns and Allen, let's go back to January 8th, 1948 for Jack Benny as guest on the Burns and Allen Show.
Oh, Chichonia. Oh, Chistrasnia.
Back 15 years.
Bill, isn't that sad?
Sad? It's miserable. You know, Gracie, I think it would look flashy if I had some gold rings on my fingers when I play. Now, I've given Mary a couple of beautiful ones. See if you can borrow them.
Oh, that will look flashy. Green fingers to match your ears. I'll be right back.
Bill, Jack and I will be a sensation if we can just get some publicity.
Well, I know a newspaper reporter. I'll send him over for a story.
Oh, thanks, Bill. And we'll give you a pair of complimentary tickets to our concert, right in the front row.
Well, Jack, I'd rather sit in the balcony.
But, Bill, you can bring your girl. You see, if you sit in the front row, she can appreciate my technique.
Well, if we sit in the balcony, she can appreciate mine.
Just send the reporter.
Yeah, so long, Gypsies.
How do you do? I'm a reporter from the news. I'd like to get a story about those two gypsies who are going to give a concert.
Oh, wonderful. What would you like to know?
Well, I understand they're brothers.
Yes, both boys.
Nice arrangement. Gypsies are supposed to be mystics. Do these boys have second sight?
Yes, they both wear glasses.
Yes. Can you tell me something about their background?
Well, it was very romantic. To begin with, they're gypsy kings because they were born... when they were born, they each weighed 20 pounds.
You mean...
King size.
I should have spotted. Now, what are their names?
Their names?
Yes.
What are some gypsy names?
Well, there's Misha and Sasha.
Oh, well, these are Georgia and Jacksha.
Are you sure these boys aren't just plain Americans?
Oh, no, no. They're straight from gypsy land. They're real gyps.
Hey, you're not kidding. So long, lady.
Gee, it feels good to get out of these gypsy costumes. You know, George, if we can just...
Come in.
Howdy, little man.
Oh, hello, Mr. Judson. Jack, this is Mr. Judson from Texas.
How do you do?
Mr. Judson, this is Jack Benny.
Jack Benny? Why, say, ain't you the world's greatest radio comedian, stage star, and movie actor?
Yes.
Well, now, it sure is an honor to shake your hand, Mr. Benny. You're a right famous celebrity.
Well, thank you, thank you.
What part of Texas you from? Dallas? Houston?
No, I'm from Waukegan. Waukegan.
Jack, huh? Jack, Mr. Judson is an oil millionaire. And he may want to put up some $5,000 to back our concert.
Well, now, I'd be right glad to put up $5,000 if Mr. Benny was from Texas, but he says he's from Waukegan?
Yes, yeah, Waukegan, Texas.
No, I don't recollect ever hearing of that town.
Waukegan, Texas? Well, you see, they might make it the capital, you know.
You don't say.
Yes, and the next governor will probably be my father, Sam Houston Benny.
Well, now, is that a fact?
And after he served a term as governor of Texas, he may be elected president of the United States.
Oh, well, now, I'd sure hate to see him step down to a less important job.
Mr. Judson, I've got a TL for you. The people who run this world don't come from Texas.
Yeah, and look what a mess they got it in.
Well, Mr. Judson, do I get the $5,000?
Well, now, that depends. What are you going to do in the concert, Mr. Benny?
Play the violin. I have my instrument with me, if you'd care to hear a bit of technique.
Oh, I'd admire to. Scrape away. Wait a minute. Kind of hold on a minute. You get the money.
Good, good.
Yeah, on one condition. You got to promise not to tell nobody you're from Texas.
Now, when do I get the $5,000?
Oh, I'd give it to you now, but I ain't got no small bills on me.
Mm. This kid is loaded with oil wells, you know.
Well, boy, have you... Oh, hello, Mr. Judson.
Howdy, little lady.
Well, did you hear about the plans for the concert?
Yeah, and I'm going to put $5,000 into it.
My goodness, that much?
Oh, I can afford it, little lady. I made a pile of money from drilling.
Oh, you're a dentist, too.
Oh, I like your sense of humor, man. I'll be seeing you.
Bill, we called you back because our concert is all set and we want you to be master of ceremonies.
Yes, Bill. Where do you think we should give the concert? The Hollywood Bowl?
Well, I would definitely give it in the open air.
Well, show us how you'd handle the MC job, will you, Bill?
All right, Jack. How's this? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hollywood Bowl. Tonight you have a real treat in store.
I like that.
Yeah, it's nice. You are about to receive the thrill of a lifetime.
Good.
Now, in a moment, these curtains will part and the ushers will pass among you with Maxwell House coffee.
Bill.
Rich, delicious, mellow Maxwell House. So wonderfully
Bill,
satisfying.
Billy boy.
Good to the last drop.
Dimples. Look. That's all you're going to say?
Oh, no, then I'll say Maxwell House is the very best in coffee-drinking pleasure, yet it costs but a fraction of a penny more per cup than the cheapest coffee you can buy.
Never mind, I'll get Don Wilson to announce us.
Don Wilson. Okay. No one will come to your concert anyway.
Oh, no, we'll fill Hollywood Bowl.
Well, maybe you're right. Don Wilson practically fills it alone.
Goodbye, comedian.
So long, troubadour.
Well, George, let's line up the concert. Now, I think you should open the show.
No, Jack, you open the show.
No, George, I insist. You open the show. I want them to hear your voice first.
Well, thank you.
So you walk out on the stage all alone.
Okay.
And introduce me.
Huh?
And I'll play my first number, then I'll introduce you.
Then I sing.
No, you announce my second number.
Look, how about giving me a crack at the third number?
Thanks, George, but I'll announce my own third number. Don't worry.
Jack, I should be the star of the concert.
Well, Mr. Judson sent over the $5,000. Have you got the concert lined up?
No, Gracie, there seems to be a difference of opinion about who should be the star.
Oh, but you boys are dear friends. George, tell Jack what you think of his violin playing.
Well,
Jack, tell George what you think of his singing. How dare you think that kind of language in front of a lady?
I apologize.
Me too.
Oh, besides, you're mistaken about George. There's no greater singer in the world than Sugar Throat.
Sugar Throat?
Yes.
Gracie, a seal makes the same noise and balances a ball on its nose.
You're wrong, Jack. George makes any song completely convincing. When he sings Old Folks at Home, he makes you think of your family.
Far from the old folks at home.
Oh, brother.
Ah, you thought of your family?
Well, I'm going to be the star. After all, if it weren't for me, you couldn't even give this concert.
Why not?
Mr. Judson put up $5,000 because he thinks I stink, not you. That's why not.
Come in.
Mr. Benny, please. I followed you all the way over here. May I have the money for my lesson?
I'll pay you if you tell these people that I'm a great artist. Gracie, Here's my French violin teacher who'll tell you what a great artist I am.
Bonjour.
That's a lie.
In my opinion, Monsieur Benny is another zimbalist.
Well, then he should give up the violin and play the zimbal.
Gracie, surely the opinion of my French music teacher should settle the argument.
Oh, you think so, huh? Well, you wait right here. Now, have you got everything straight, Meredith?
Yes, Gracie. I am a famous Italian music teacher, and George is my star pupil.
Good. Now, let's go in there and show that Jack Benny up.
Good afternoon, Ola.
Huh?
I want to speak to Jack Ben.
That's probably me. Who are you?
I'm the bigger Italian musica teach, Meredith W. Caruso.
Oh, no.
And I come to tell you that he's a great.
Who's a great?
He's a great.
Who's a he's a?
He's a who's a.
George?
Catch him alive. George Burnser. I'm the teach. He's the pupe.
He's a what?
What's the matter? You don't understand English? I'm the teach. He's the pupe.
Well, part of that I go along with.
Well, thanks for dropping in, Mr. Caruso. Goodbye.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I remember him. Say, during the war, weren't you the leader of the Armed Forces Radio Service Orchestra?
Yeah, that's right.
I thought so. You were Major Wilson.
Yeah. I went in 42 as a major and came out in 45 as a second lieutenant.
Well, that's a record to be proud of.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Well, Mr. Ben, just to
Well, it almost worked.
Look, George, let's stop trying to rook each other. If this silly concert is going to break up our friendship, let's forget it.
Maybe you're right, Jack. We'd probably make down fools of ourselves as gypsies anyway.
Sure. Come on, I'll take you down to the corner and we'll get a cup of coffee.
No, Jack. I'll buy you the coffee.
That's what I meant. So long, Gracie.
Well, Gracie, I didn't get to sing in Hollywood Bowl, but I'm going to sing next week on Bing Crosby's Philco Show.
Well, now there's a man who really appreciates your voice. Bing would rather listen to you than to any other singer.
He would?
Well, yes, Bing says that if Perry Como, Dick Haymes, and Frank Sinatra sang like you, he'd be completely happy.
Good night, folks.
Good things.
Easy way.
Do you like good things the easy way? Then get instant Maxwell House coffee.
So good.
So good. True coffee flavor and fragrance, because Instant Maxwell House is not a so-called coffee product. It's all pure Maxwell House coffee in instant form.
And so easy.
So easy. Instant Maxwell House means great coffee instantly in your cup. No fuss, no muss, no bother. Today, try Instant Maxwell House. Instantly good to the last drop.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's a terrific episode of the Maxwell House Coffee Time, George Burns and Gracie Allen, January 8th, 1948, as heard on NBC. Also in the cast, you heard Mel Blanc as Professor LeBlanc. He was teaching Jack how to play the violin. Also, Gail Gordon, who was Lucille Ball's foil, Mr. Mooney, remember?
Of course, wonderful.
On the Lucille Ball show.
My favorite.
And Bill Goodwin, Toby Reed doing the announcing on that. George Burns and Gracie Allen, special guest Jack Benny on the Maxwell House Coffee Town. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Hour three of the WGN Radio Theater, and Lisa's wide awake for once. It must be all that cold medicine you're hopped up on.
Keeping me up. Yep.
Totally hopped up.
Good decongestant. I'll do
She's
that.
She's like bouncing off the walls over here.
It's true.
So, yeah, it's hour three, and in this hour, it's Tales of the Texas Rangers from 1951, starring Joel McRae. And that's going to be a lot of fun. A good Western detective adventure. Coming your way in just a few minutes, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series Imposters, about a con artist who makes men and women fall in love with her and then leaves them destitute. Interesting.
Like a Black Widow spider.
Yeah, I like it. Right. Interesting. And she's just the one for the job. And if you guessed this correctly, you will get a 4-CD set of the Twilight Zone audio dramas hosted by Stacy Keach and produced by Mr. Carl Amari.
All right, we're going to give away some Twilight Zone CDs.
Yep.
So here's a hint. First of all, the number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's the hint. She played Mia in Pulp Fiction.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to go to the bathroom and powder my nose. You sit here and think of something to say.
I'm
guessing you would date her.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, I think
absolutely.
So.
Absolutely, I would.
She's mysterious.
312-981-7200. Who is that actress? So win some Twilight Zone CDs. We'll be right back.
And we are back here at WGN Radio, playing Celebrity Scoop on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's hear it again.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to go to the bathroom and powder my nose. You sit here and think of something to say.
And we have Jill on the line from Milwaukee. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great.
Great. We're glad you called in and you got through, and I'm guessing you know that actress.
Yes, Uma Thurman.
That is right, Uma Thurman. And we're wondering, you probably don't know her that well, but you probably just know who she is.
Yeah,
I made it sound like you guys were best friends.
I remember the David Letterman, when he hosted the Oscars, and kept saying, Oprah, Uma, Oprah.
Yeah, they look a lot alike, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're easily confused.
That's what I was thinking, too. And Jill, we're so happy to give you the Twilight Zone audio dramas. It's a 4-CD set. Mr. Carl Amari produces them. They are fantastic. And Stacy Keach is the host, and he's got some great actors. I might even pop up here and there.
Yeah, you're probably in some of them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's exciting.
I think you'll dig it.
Thank you so much for calling in. We're thrilled to give that to
you. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
Take care. All right, so it's time now, Lisa, for Tales of the Texas Rangers. This was a modern Western series. It wasn't set back in like the 1800s, like Gunsmoke or Have Gun Will Travel. It was actually set in the 1940s and 50s. And like its predecessor, Dragnet, Tales of the Texas Rangers adapted actual police case files. Now, the Texas Ranger, Jace Pearson, was portrayed by Joel McRae, and he presented modern-day versions of stories that were true crime cases, and they used the latest scientific techniques to identify criminals. And this series was produced by Stacy Keach's dad. We were talking about Stacy Keach. His father, Stacy Keach Sr., produced this. It ran on radio from 1950 until 1952. So let's go back to November 11th, 1951, for an episode called Open and Shut. It stars Joel McRae. Here's part one of Tales of the Texas Rangers.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. From Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case transcribed from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles, and 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. Now, from the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, Open and Shut.
It is 1:37 a.m., September 9, 1945. John Meston, a wealthy rancher, is awakened by the sound of a speeding car screeching to a stop on the driveway outside his house. Seconds later, he jumps out of bed and reaches for a robe as the downstairs door opens. His daughter, Connie, comes up the stairs screaming hysterically.
Connie! Connie, baby! What is it? What's the matter?
Bob, dead?
What happened to him? Connie, get hold of yourself. What happened?
I'm frightened, Daddy. I'm frightened. There was a man with a bandana over his face.
Where, Connie? Where?
The old cattle road east of the ranch. We were parked there. And... Oh,
here, sit down. Sit down while I call the sheriff. You'd better have a doctor. Get something for your nerves.
He tried to hold us up.
Why, Bob?
Father had his gun in the car. They fought over it.
Operator?
Operator, get me Sheriff Sykes. I want to report a murder.
Connie Meston was in no condition to be questioned, and Sheriff Sykes had only an incoherent story to follow. He called the Texas Rangers. Ranger Jace Pearson was assigned to the case. He arrived at the Meston Ranch shortly before dawn.
Might as well wait here in the library, Ranger. The doctor's still in with the girl. He's had a mighty bad shock.
Did she tell you where it happened, Sheriff?
Yeah, the old cattle road east of the ranch. I got some men riding out there now. They'll call us as soon as they find the body.
That girl isn't going to be able to talk real soon. We'd better get out with your men.
Oh, here's the girl's father.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Sheriff.
Oh, how are you, Mr. Meston?
Glad you got here, Ranger.
Can we talk to your daughter now, Mr. Meston?
I'm afraid not. Doctor's put her to sleep. Says she must have absolute rest for a few hours.
There's no point in our waiting then, Sheriff. We can come back later.
I'm sorry, but that'd be best. I'll walk out with you.
What's the best way to get to that cattle road?
Drive into town, then around the highway. Be shorter to cut across the ranch on horses. You got yours and your trailer. Maybe Mr. Meston will lend me one.
Take your pick of the stable, Sheriff.
Couldn't we drive across the range?
No, you got a ravine to cross and a stream to ford.
What time did your daughter get home, Mr. Meston?
Just a minute before I called the sheriff. Little after 1:30. I'd only been in bed about an hour.
Locked up about 12:30 and turned in.
Is this the car she came home in?
Yeah, Bob Brady's car. I heard her drive up, then I heard her crying. Came in and tore up the stairs to my bedroom. I'm afraid it's going to take a long time to get over this.
Don't let anybody touch this car until I can get a fingerprint man to go over it. Killer may have left his mark someplace.
I'll see it ain't touched.
Well, I'll go get me a horse in the stable, Ranger. How well did your daughter know Brady?
Well, they went around together for a spell, but this date last night was the first they'd had in a long time. Brady worked for me.
Doing what?
Accountant. Handled all the ranch business. Got an office in one wing of the house.
I see. I'll radio for a fingerprint man to come down from our lab while the sheriff's getting his horse.
Want me to ride with you for any reason?
No. Better do whatever you can to bring your daughter around so we can talk to her. We'll be back later. I made my radio call, and then Sheriff Sykes and I cut across the ranch to the old road. The riders had just found Bob Brady's body. Nothing had been touched. The riders waited while the sheriff and I went over the ground. Standing right beside the car when he was killed. Car tracks are heaviest here where it was parked.
Yeah.
Brady and the girl's been walking around, though. If prints go over that way and then turn around and come back here to the body. There's a third set of prints mixed in with theirs.
Yeah, it must be the killers.
Yeah. Came up the road here and stopped beside the car and walked on again. Heavy powder burns on Brady's coat. He was shot from close up.
I only saw the girl for a minute. Couldn't make much out of what she was saying, but I think Brady was killed with his own gun.
How come?
Carried an automatic in the glove compartment of his car. He toted quite a bit of the ranch's cash on him sometime.
It's funny the killer didn't use his own gun, unless he didn't have one.
Well, the girl said Brady tried to get his gun from the car. The fellow took the gun away from Brady and killed him. So I guess he couldn't have had a gun of his own.
It doesn't make sense. He was taking a mighty big chance, staging a holdup if he wasn't armed. Although I guess it was robbery, all right. Brady doesn't seem to have a cent on him. No wallet, no wristwatch, nothing.
Yeah, no doubt about the motive. Well, I guess I better have the body moved into town. Deputy can notify Brady's mother.
Yeah. I'm better order an autopsy report. Isn't going to tell us anything we don't know, though. Keep a couple of your riders here.
Sure thing, but what do you want them to do?
Beat the brush and look for Brady's gun. While they're looking, we can follow this extra set of tracks and see where they lead. I expected to follow the marks of a man who didn't want to be followed. The usual erratic trail a killer leaves when he's trying to throw off pursuit. But this trail led straight as an arrow.
Hey, whoever he is, he sure didn't cover his tracks very well.
No, unless he's headed for some spot where he knows his trail will be lost. Hey, wait a minute. Whoa, boy.
Whoa.
Charcoal.
What is it?
Trouble may start here.
Yeah. Turned off the road into the fields.
Ground's worn that way, though. It's a path that's been used before. Come on.
Come on.
The grass has been trampled from regular use. Anybody live out here you know of?
Nope. Yeah. Yeah, an old shack about a mile and a half across. Used to be a line house. Owner rents it to a Mexican.
We better have a talk with him. We can move a little faster, but keep your eye out for those tracks as we go.
Get out, Charlie.
We reached the shack, and the earth around it were the boot prints of a man. They matched the ones we'd been following.
Yeah. He's in there, all right, Ranger.
Yeah. He may still have that gun with him.
He was up late. Could still be asleep.
Come on. We'll see. Beside his bunk, bent nail in the heel of one of them.
Yep. Made the mark we've been following, all right. He's our boy.
All right, you. Wake up.
Who's that?
Come on, get up.
Chris, what have I done? Why'd you come here?
What's your name?
Jose Morales, senor.
Where were you last night?
I walk into town.
Anybody see you there?
Si, senor. The man in the package store. I stopped there to buy a bottle of wine. There's the bottle on the table.
What time did you leave town, Morales?
It was almost midnight, I think.
And you walked home, too?
Si, senor, si. But why do you ask me all these questions? I don't know.
How long does it take you to walk back here?
Hour, maybe more. I don't have a watch, senor.
Are you sure you don't have a watch now?
Si, I never own one, senor.
How about a gun?
I don't have a gun.
How did you come when you came home?
Well, I don't remember, senor. I just walked.
Well, you better remember. You came up the cattle road. We followed your boot tracks. Were you alone all the time?
Si, alone.
You didn't see a car parked on the cattle road?
Si, senor. Si. Mm-hmm. There is men and girls there. They will remember that they see me there.
What's that? Hold it, Sheriff. Go ahead, Morales. When did they see you?
On the way home, I passed by the car. I think maybe the car is broke down. So I took a look inside, but there's nobody there.
Uh-huh.
And then I walk a little further. I meet a man and girl. I asked them, is something wrong with the car?
Go ahead.
Well, they told me no. So I just come away. Senor, if you can find them, they will remember. They can tell you I was there.
This man's walking himself right into the electric chair, Jace.
Yeah, too easy. You better get dressed, Morales. You're coming with us.
But why, senor? What have I done?
You'll find out later. Just get dressed. Let's comb this shack, Sheriff. See if we can find that gun.
There you have the first portion of Open and Shut on Tales of the Texas Rangers, a broadcast from 1951 starring Joel McRae. Also in the cast, Joan Banks, Parley Bear. Remember who Parley Bear was? First of all, he was the Keebler Elf. He was the main Keebler Elf, Parley Bear. But also, he was Deputy Chester Proudfoot on Gunsmoke. But on the Andy Griffith Show, Parley Bear was the mayor. Remember the mayor?
Only because we've talked about that, I would not have known
Parley
that.
Bear.
But I did used to watch the Andy Griffith
Show. I had the great pleasure of meeting Parley Bear. I wish I would. I wonder. I think I did interview him, now that I think about it. I met him at one of these conventions.
Yeah.
He was so great. He was so sweet. What a nice man.
Oh.
He's no longer with us, unfortunately. Those were the days. Great actor. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. 1:35 in the morning. Thanks for staying up with us. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. And to my right, the vivacious, kind of sick, Lisa Wolf.
I feel better. I took a little medicine. It did me some good.
And then the world's greatest producer, Elif Garris. She's in there. She's sleeping. She's out.
Oh, you caught me.
She snores like a lumberjack, that Elif
Garris. I've heard about
she's
that.
She's just like a little thing, but you should hear the noise that comes out of her mouth.
I snore? Do I really?
Oh, gosh. I had to put...
Last time you slept with her, you heard
cork.
All that snoring.
I had to put
slept
a cork...
next to me.
I had to put a cork in each ear.
Her ears or your ears?
My ears.
Oh. And in my nose, probably.
Well, at least put the cork in your ears this time.
She's a tiny little thing, and just like...
Wow.
Yeah, gosh.
And you do that so well.
Don't it? Doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's like very natural for him.
Yeah,
I was thinking
it is.
The same
that was
thing,
me,
Roger.
Lisa, and Roger.
Oh, really? Oh, my
bad. That was Elif.
Yeah, impersonating myself.
All right, we are tuning in to Tales of the Texas Rangers, a true crime story called Open and Shut. Here's the conclusion now, Tales of the Texas Rangers.
We didn't find the gun or anything else that might have been taken from Brady. And the sheriff's riders drew a blank, too. But we had enough to hold Morales at the jail. We locked him up and went back to the Meston Ranch.
Before you speak to my daughter, gentlemen, I want to ask you to kind of take it easy. In here. Connie, it's Sheriff Sykes and the ranger.
Howdy.
Miss Connie.
Hello.
Miss Meston, would you mind telling us just what happened last night?
Well, Bob called me, Bob Brady. He wanted to see me. We hadn't seen each other for some time.
I thought he worked here at the ranch.
Well, he did. I meant we hadn't been out together for a long time.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, he picked me up here, and we drove. Then we parked up the old cattle road.
Lots of young folks parked there on an off ranger. It's sort of a lover's lane.
We'd been there quite a while talking. See, Bob was going to be married next month to a girl named Mildred Peterson.
She's a school teacher, ranger. I see. Go ahead, Miss Meston.
Well, he asked me if I wouldn't change my mind and make up with him before he got married and it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
I told him we weren't right for each other. He'd be happier with somebody else, and then, well, all of a sudden a man came up to the car. It was dark, and he had a bandana over his face.
Go on.
He held us up. He made us get out of the car.
You have a gun?
I'm not sure. I was frightened. He had something in his hand. He took Bob's wallet and his watch, and then he told us to stay right where we were.
Didn't he take anything from you?
Well, yes. Yes, he took my purse.
Then what happened?
Well, all of a sudden, Bob made a dash for the car. He got his gun from the glove compartment, but the man was right after him. They fought. The man got the gun away from Bob, and he shot Bob and ran away.
Hey, gentlemen, if you don't mind...
Just
I
another second, that... Mr. Meston. Miss Meston, what were you wearing?
Well, just a plain blue taffeta dress. It's right there on the chair.
After that, you took Brady's car and drove back here, and your father called the sheriff, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Driving back from there, you had to come through town. Why didn't you stop and get to a phone?
I was frightened. I couldn't think. I wanted to get home.
You should be able to understand that, Ranger. After all, the
sure,
girl kept...
Sure, Mr. Meston. Just checking. You said you were in bed and heard your daughter drive up, is that right?
Yes, like I told you before. I locked up and turned in about 12:30. Connie come home about an hour later.
Came in and right up to your bedroom, is that right?
Yes. Why?
Just getting the picture. All right, Sheriff. We can go now.
Right. Oh, we can find our own way out, Mr. Meston. Miss Connie can come into town and dictate her statement in a day or so.
Thank you, Sheriff. Bye.
Well, Ranger, this looks like a quick one to me. Case against the Mexican Morales is open and shut.
I don't know, Sheriff. Somebody's lying. Meston said he locked up and went to bed. His daughter came in and went tearing up to his bedroom.
Well, what's wrong with that?
How'd she get into the house if Morales took her purse? Her keys would be in her.
Well, she might have had her key in the pocket of her dress.
Might have, except for one thing. That dress has no pockets. I checked on Morales' story as best I could. He had been in town, and he had bought a bottle of wine to take home with him the night of the murder. But when I got back to the jail, the sheriff had evidence piling up against the Mexican.
Your fingerprint crew dropped off copies of prints they found on Brady's car.
Uh-huh.
These prints were found only on the door of the car. Now, compare them with these.
Hmm. Same man, all right.
Matching set of the prints I rolled off Morales when we brought him in. He must have done it.
Maybe, but I'm not convinced. I'll see you later.
Here, where are you going, Ranger?
To see Brady's mother and the girl he was going to marry.
The only boy I had left. His two brothers were killed in the war. And...
Please, Mother Brady, we've got to help the Ranger.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ranger.
It's all right, ma'am. How long had it been since your son had been out with Connie Meston before last night?
6 months. I thought it was all over. I thought she'd leave him alone when she knew him and Mildred was going to be married.
Did he brood about her much during the time he wasn't seeing her?
No. He knew it was best. She was spoiled. She never really wanted him. Except when she found out she couldn't have him.
Miss Peterson, you and Brady ever quarrel about Connie Meston?
Oh, no. He was over it. He knew what she was.
She's a cruel, heartless little cheat. She made his life miserable.
Have you got any idea why he called her and asked her to see him that night?
Well, Ranger, he didn't call her. She called him.
You're sure of that?
heard him answer the phone. He didn't want to go, but she must have been insisting, because after a while he said all right, he'd meet her just once. For the last time.
Thanks.
Ranger, is it true what we heard? You've got the killer in jail?
I wouldn't count on that. Yet. I went back to the jail and questioned Morales again. He was frightened, but his story never moved an inch from what he told us the first time. Then I saw the sheriff.
I spoke to the district attorney, Jace. He thinks we got enough to take the grand jury for an indictment.
Give me one of the mug shots you took of Morales when you brought him in.
Sure. Here's a picture.
Thanks. I want Connie Meston to look at it and see if she can identify Morales.
Well, she said the man who stuck him up had a bandana over his face.
She said a lot of things, Sheriff. Brady struggled with the man who killed him. Morales carried a bottle of wine from town to his shack. We checked that. If he had a struggle with anyone, how come he didn't drop the bottle and break it?
It seems like it would have broke, don't it?
You got a bandana here?
Yeah, the one we took from Morales. Why?
No, not that one. I want one with a different color and pattern.
Maybe you want in my deputy's locker.
Get it. I want to see how many lies Connie Meston can tell. I won't be satisfied with the case against Morales until we find Brady's gun and the things that were supposed to be stolen. I went back to the Meston ranch the next morning. Connie Meston was taking Brady's death hard. As hard as a rock. She wasn't at the ranch house. She was near the corral, training a jumper to take a fence.
All right, come on, boy, now. Let's go. Come on. Oh, now, back again. Come on. Come on. Come on, I said. Well, I'll teach you to balk. When I want you to jump, you'll jump. Come on.
Take it easy with that horse.
Oh. Ranger, I didn't see you coming.
Glad to see you've recovered from your shock.
Well, I had to find something to occupy my mind. Thought I'd work my horses. Got them ended in the show at El Paso next Sunday.
It'd be nice if the horse lives that long, the way you use that whip.
It happens to be my horse. Now, what do you want, anyway?
A little information. We may have the man who killed Brady.
Oh, yeah, I heard. The Mexican Morales?
News gets around. Here's a picture of him. Is he the man?
Hey, he could be. He looks like the one.
What do you recognize? That scar on his chin?
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, no. His face was covered.
Yeah. I almost forgot about that. Is this the bandana you saw?
Well, it was dark, but it was just like that one.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks.
That all you want to know, Ranger?
Yeah, that's all. For now. I saw Connie Meston's father as I was leaving the ranch. He seemed pale and shaky seeing me there. I was certain that Connie Meston was lying all the way. The sheriff dropped a bombshell in my lap when I got back to the jail. He was running for his car when I drove up.
Hey, Sheriff! Sheriff, where are you going?
Oh, I'm glad you got here. I was just heading for Morales' place. You'll want to come along, I reckon.
Why? What's out there?
I think we're going to find the gun and the stuff he stole. Look, here. Just got this in the mail. It was posted last night in the Mexican section.
The note was printed in Spanish on yellow paper. It said, "Look in cattle tank near Morales' house." That was all.
Reckon Morales trusted a friend who decided to double-cross him?
We better get out there.
Well, there's no doubt about this case now, Ranger. We find that gun, and Morales is headed for the electric chair for sure.
Hey, here. Here's something else.
What'd you find?
The watch. Brady's wrist watch.
Good.
Well, this is all of it. Come on, let's get out of this water.
Sure.
Nice haul. The gun, the girl's purse, Brady's wallet, and wristwatch, right on Morales' doorstep. That's the end of this case. No, it isn't.
Oh, now, Jase.
Look at these things, Sheriff. Look at the muzzle of this gun. It's clogged solid with dirt, packed tight.
Well, always some mud in the bottom of a cattle tank.
Yeah, but this isn't mud. It's packed earth, and it's packed so tight it didn't dissolve in the water.
Yeah. Say, that is funny.
Sheriff, this gun was buried someplace after it was fired. Buried and then dug up again and thrown into this cattle tank.
Say, you're right. Traces of dirt packed into the holes of the watch band, too. And in the wallet.
Sure. But look at this purse. The purse wasn't buried. Or the same dirt would be jammed in the metal frame. Connie Meston's keys. She had them when she ran home after Brady was shot. She brought the purse with her to plant with the stuff she dug up after she knew Morales was under suspicion.
You mean she killed Brady, buried the evidence before she went home to make it look like robbery?
Yeah, because the real motive was jealousy. You hold Morales another 24 hours. That'll be long enough to get what we need. Then Connie Meston can take his place.
But you got no proof on her.
I'll send that anonymous note through to the handwriting division at our lab. They can get a sample of Connie Meston's writing from horse show registration blanks at El Paso for comparison.
Yes, but will that help, Ranger? After all, the note is printed, and it's in Spanish.
There'll still be similarity in letter formations. Besides, registration blanks usually ask for printed information on breeding and identification. If Connie Meston wrote that note, lab will know it. It checked. Connie Meston's printing on registration blanks for the horse show matched the printing on the anonymous note. It was almost enough, but I wanted one more thing. A trace of dirt on something she owned. A trace that would match the earth that had been packed in the muzzle of Brady's gun when it was buried. I drove out to the Meston ranch and found Connie in the stables. Mind if I come in?
Oh, you here again? What do you want this time?
Thought you might like to know we found Brady's gun. Anonymous note told us where it was. Cattle tank out at Morales' place.
You got a good case, then.
No, Morales didn't put the gun in the tank.
How do you know?
Because the gun and the other things had been buried. They were dug up again and thrown in the tank.
Well, maybe he decided to change the hiding place.
While we were holding him in jail? No, it's not likely. Morales didn't kill Brady.
Well, you know who did?
Not for sure, but we'll find out. Whoever dug those things up must have carried them in something while they were taking them to the cattle tank. Some dirt was jammed in the muzzle of the gun. We find out what it was carried in, clothing maybe, somebody's pocket. We can match the dirt in our lab.
I see. That's very interesting.
I thought you'd think so. Well, guess I better be getting back to town. I drove away from the ranch and parked behind some trees that gave me a view of the stable. A minute after I left her, Connie Meston came out, riding like the wind. I unloaded charcoal from the trailer and followed her, always keeping cover between us. She didn't seem to be carrying anything to dispose of, but all of a sudden she came to a stop by a stream. She took the saddlebags and started to shake them out over the water. Oh, oh boy, oh boy.
All right, charcoal, let's go. Get out, boy. Get out.
Stay right where you are, Miss Meston.
What are you doing here, Ranger? What's the matter with you?
I'll take those saddlebags.
Sure.
Any law against emptying them into a stream?
None that I know of.
Well, take them then, Ranger, because they're empty.
Not as empty as you wish they were. And a few grains of dirt stuck in the seam. That's all we're going to need.
Well, you can't make anything out of that.
Oh, I got a few other things. That anonymous note in Spanish matched the registration blanks you sent into El Paso. I don't think you'll be showing your horses Sunday.
Why, you...
Give me that whip.
You... Let's go.
You won't be using this again either. Now, get on your horse and ride for the house. I'm taking her in, Mr. Meston. I got an idea you started to suspect she was lying the same time I did.
She's not lying, Ranger. She didn't know nothing about it. I did it. I shot Brady.
I'm sorry, but that won't work either. I got her pinned down all the way.
Daddy, Daddy, help me talk to him. Well, give him some money. Well, what kind of a father are you if you can't help me?
Shut up!
Why, you hit me.
Yes. I should have started 20 years ago before I let you get to be what you are. Maybe I'm not legally guilty, Ranger, but I'm guilty of raising her the way I did.
Too bad you didn't think of it sooner.
All right, Connie. Let's get into town.
Connie Meston's trial was spotted with hysterics that failed to convince the court, although she maintained she was innocent in the face of overwhelming evidence against her. Then, as the trial neared a close, she changed her plea to guilty, and in an effort to avoid a death sentence, she confessed. She was sentenced to the women's prison at Huntsville for 50 years.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McRae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production, Cattle Drive. The cast included Tony Barrett, Joan Banks, Francis X. Bushman, Parley Bear, and Vivi Janis. Technical advisor was Captain M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez of the Texas Rangers. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcott, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. Hal Gibney speaking.
It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC.
That's Tales of the Texas Rangers, November 11th, 1951. Open and Shut, starring Joel McRae, also Joan Banks, Parley Bear in that, Francis X. Bushman, Hal Gibney doing the announcing. And that was produced and directed by the one and only Stacy Keach Sr., his son. Stacy Keach Jr., of course, was Mike Hammer on radio, and he was the star of my Twilight Zone radio dramas. And you know what, Lisa? Very funny. I'm watching the monitors up here, and they're showing the new Prison Break that's coming out.
Yep.
And Stacy Keach, you may remember this, was the warden on that show. And one time I was there visiting him on the set, and he's like, he told the director, let's put Carl in this episode. And so the director was like, okay. So it was the first season, and the episode is called Brother's Keeper. I have two scenes in the episode of Prison Break. So if you ever have a chance to watch Prison Break, the first season, there's an episode called Brother's Keeper. I have two scenes. They're not with Stacy, though, but they're with Sucre, who was one of the characters on there. And he holds me up. I'm running a liquor store, and he holds me up at gunpoint.
Well, who were they going
in
to
two
use
scenes?
If it
what?
Wasn't you that
what?
Day? Who would they have used
I don't
if
know.
Not for you?
I don't know if the other actor didn't show up or he got canned or what happened, but I all of a sudden I'm like, I'm what? I'm going to be acting today? And they're like, yeah, you're playing the liquor store owner. So, and you know what? People tell me all the time, they're like, were you on Prison Break? I guess people watch that all the time.
Yeah, I've never watched
and
that
And I'm like,
show,
yeah.
But
yeah,
I know
I
that
was.
They filmed
yeah, I was
it
in,
here.
Yeah, I was in Prison Break.
Yeah.
Big actor in that series, you know. Two whole scenes.
Well, you just keep that in your head.
All right, I
all
will.
Right.
All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Is Dave going to be here to chat about the show? If not, we're going to put Joey on. But when Lisa and I are back, Lisa and I are back tonight. They give us no rest. We're on in the same day.
We're back for no rest.
Again, today, tonight.
You want to tell them what's on tonight?
Yes, go ahead,
all
Lisa.
All right, we've got The Life of Riley, The Fat Man, and Escape. A lot of people have been asking
I think that's
for
not
those.
Politically correct to say
the fat man.
I think we should just say
the large man.
Somewhat overweight man. Right? What do you think of that, Dave? Is that better? The somewhat overweight
man? He's
just
fat. Sorry, there was
no
headphones.
He's fat,
really,
and you know what?
He kind of is fat.
It has a better ring to it, the fat man.
Yeah, the fat man.
Is he William Conrad? Who's that?
yeah, actually, J. Scott Smart played the fat man, and he was a big guy. He was like a 300-pound
guy.
Although,
of
it
sorts.
Wouldn't really matter.
Well, you know, these shows
were a lot of times
done in front of a live studio audience. So
true.
It kinda, but yeah. I don't know if the fat man was... but there was, of course, the Thin Man, the Fat Man, and Sam Spade. Those were all created by Dashiell Hammett. Those were his detectives.
Right. Okay.
It was a very popular show. We have an episode for you coming up tonight when Lisa and I are back here at 11 p.m.